Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting for the City of Arroyo Grande for Tuesday, September 25th. Roll call, please.
Here.
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 Here. Next item on our agenda this evening is our flag salute, and we're privileged to have Cub Scout Pack 13, Den 2, here to lead us this evening in the flag salute. And if you would, please remain standing for our invocation. Dr. Mayor Harnish is here from Baha'i Faith to do that for us.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
O thou merciful God, O kind Father, confer thy blessings. Consider not our shortcomings. Shelter us under thy protection. Remember not our sins. Heal us with thy mercy. We are weak, thou art mighty. We are poor, thou art rich. We are sick, thou art the physician. We are needy, thou art most generous. O God, endow us with thy providence. Thou art the powerful, thou art the giver, and thou art the beneficent. Amen.
Thank you. Kelly, do we have a handheld mic by chance? Don't go away, gentlemen. You get to talk tonight. Did you actually shoot arrows?
Yeah.
Real arrows? Did you hit the target? Good. Anything else?
No.
Okay, well, we want to thank these young men for being here this evening. And we hope you'll come back and do our flag salute again. Will you do that for us? Okay, will you come back? Okay, I promise I won't make you talk too long if you come back. All right, thanks. Okay. Sorry, but that's fun. So it's one of those things that you like to do. Okay, we have no special presentation items that are on the agenda this evening. However, I do have a couple of announcements to make. First of all, the City Council just adjourned from closed session where we discussed both legal issues and personnel matters, and we have no report at this time. Second announcement is not only for the benefit of those of you who are in the audience this evening, but also those of you who might be viewing on TV this evening. I think it's probably important that you understand that we were approached about a week ago by Walmart for a permit for a music event this evening. There was some misunderstanding about the nature of that event, And as a result of that, the permit was issued, and the magnitude of the event was far greater than we anticipated. That event is taking place as we speak up at Five City Center. It turned out to be a much larger concert than we anticipated. As a result of that, we do expect that there's going to be some traffic issues. There will be some noise issues from between 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock. As a result of that, we have learned a great deal about our permitting process, and we promise to tighten it up. For those of you in the community who may happen to be watching this program, if you can avoid that area this evening, all the better. And for the community who lives in and around Five City Center, it's going to be noisy for 2 hours. And once again, our apologies. And sometimes those things happen, and this was one of those events. We do have or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and address any item that is not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action that is not published on items that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you be mindful of the 3-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. And we already have one taker, I know. Okay?
Yes, sir. My name is Mitch Mundahl, and I represent Manfred Freutel, DBA MGF Enterprises, and the renters at 400 South Elm Street and 425 Ash and 425 South Elm. I brought a petition that has been signed by the renters in opposition to the dog park. They're requesting that the city reject that, to review it, to bring it back up for public discussion. A dog park by its very nature is a nuisance, a pig in a parlor. By placing it next to the bedroom windows of renters, it will surely cause stresses and concern for the residents. The noise, the barking, the people, the cars, it's all a nuisance. And a special interest group driving this dog park boasts there's 3,500 licensed dogs in the Five Cities area. 10% of that would be 350 dogs. The area that's designed there is just too small for such a large event. If there were 3,500, who knows? A dog park would unduly burden an already busy area. Elm Street, Fair Oaks, Farrell, and Ash Streets would be impacted. And for who? A select special group of privileged people who have the luxury of owning a dog. None of the affected renters near the proposed park own a dog and have backyards, yet the privileged class of dog owners disregards them for their own pleasures. There are many parks more suited for a dog park in the Five Cities area. However, the homeowners, a much more powerful opposition, won't allow it, so the special interest group of privileged dog owners chooses a site next to the powerless renters. MGF Enterprises, with over 140 rental units within the purview of the park, is attempting to stop a wrong before it goes too far. MGF Enterprises provides much needed housing for the very dog park. They'll probably be receiving many complaints in the future from affected residents. It would be more prudent to address this issue now rather than later. And then I have this petition that was signed.
Okay, fine. If you want to hand that petition to our city clerk, we'll take it. You did good. Okay. Good. Thank you very much. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Once again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close community comments and suggestions. We'll move to the consent agenda. This evening, if you're following along on our schedule or on our agenda, these are consent items 8A through 8I. And before we get into these items, this is also an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward on any of those items. Once again, 8A through 8I. If there's public comment on any of those items that you would like to address, this is an opportunity for you to do so. Once again, we would ask you to be mindful of the 3-minute rule. And you may come forward at this time if there's any public input on consent. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the consent agenda. For those of you who follow along on our agendas, you know that the consent agenda is generally approved. Those items are generally approved in one motion unless there is a particular item on the consent agenda that a council member would like to pull for individual clarification or an independent action. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items? I do have one item that I would like to pull, and that's 8I for some further clarification. Before we get into it, I'll entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8H.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything to read in there?
No, Mayor Forrest.
Okay. Then roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. 8I. Don, you're sitting up here, so I'm assuming you're the lead person of those kinds of requirements.
We did get a bid from Lee Wilson, and the bid was based on a typical street light. It was a typical short arm cobra head street light, which are somewhat shielded to focus in the down position. I think there's a total of five or six of them. There's several along West Branch, and then I think there's three or four on site.
Okay. Well, this may require some additional follow-up with them, because what I think is going to be crucial there is that we look at the reduced glare. We went through this when we were discussing Five City Center years ago, particularly in those light standards that were closest to the residents. And I think what we want to do is ensure minimum glare from that facility. So if it's okay with the council, what I'd like to do is have you go back and maybe take another look at the type of appliance that they're going to install and make sure that the glare is focused downwards and not outwards. And then to the extent that we can look at we might as well start looking at a greener approach to lighting, the extent to which that's feasible at this stage of the game. Anyhow, I think the direction on 8I would just simply be to explore that, do what we can, and if that's okay with the council. And anybody want to chime in on that? Okay. Then with that, I'll move approval of 8I with that stipulation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Okay, that will take us to our first public hearing. And that's 9A, consideration of the use of the 2007-2008 Citizens Option for Public Safety or COPS program. And I understand Steve is preoccupied. Is that correct? Or is he here?
He looks to be preoccupied.
I think he's preoccupied out of the bouncer. Why don't we go on to the next item?
Well, can you cover this for him? I don't think this is going to be a big issue, Steve. I don't particularly want
operations or any maintenance of effort of existing expenditures. So it has to be used for either new staffing or new equipment or capital purchases or capital upgrades. And so we've had a program the last few years in updating our radio equipment and radio system. And so this year we're recommending the funding go to another phase in that. And most of it's, at this point, outdated equipment. It's no longer maintained. And so is pretty in a fairly serious condition that needs to be improved. As part of this project and analysis, however, we have discussed the need as we move forward to develop a communications master plan that would be in conjunction with the fire department and our neighboring agencies. As I said, this equipment is really necessary at this time to replace outdated equipment. But as we move forward, we want to have a plan in place to ensure maximum interoperability between the different agencies and making sure that all the equipment is compatible with each other. And so we may come back. We're pursuing other grant funds for money to do that plan or to do that study. If we need some matching funds for that grant, we may come back to you at some point of the year and want to use a small amount of this money to help that effort. But at this point, the appropriation is for moving ahead with the next phase of the radio system upgrade.
Okay, thanks. This program is not new to us, and I think if you recall the last time it was on our agenda, Chief Terbork, former Chief Terbork at the time, indicated that I believe it was Motorola that provided the initial equipment that is so outdated they have indicated to us that they can no longer maintain it. So that's where the money's going for new communications and other items that are indicated here. Are there any clarifications, questions of the staff report? Okay. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the public who would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on 9A, bring this back to the council. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I certainly concur with staff's position here that we'll continue doing what we have basically set up with, if I'm remembering correctly.
And with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve 9A.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the Chief Police's recommendation to utilize the fiscal year 07-08 COPS funds to continue to be used as part of the multi-year program for the replacement and enhancement of the police department's radio-based communications equipment.
Second. We have a motion and we have a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
And there is another action there that needs to be voted on.
Well, I move we also use the accrued interest to be designated for use of the fund's special department studies to allow staff to purchase equipment and supplies not contained in this year's budget.
Does that include the additional appropriation of $61,000 carried over from the 2006?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
He knew that.
I just wanted to clarify.
He was testing you, Tim. Okay, so we have that expanded motion. And did we have a second?
Second.
All right. Now we'll do a roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to our second public hearing this evening, 9B, consideration of a vesting tentative tract map, case number 04-004, planned unit development case number 04-001, commercial retail office and residential development, 415 East Branch Street. Good evening, Kelly.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. As council is aware, this project does have a long history, which started in 2001 when the Creekside project was initially submitted. The EIR for that project was certified in September of 2003, which determined that the main Loomis House is eligible for listing with the state as a historic resource, and then that the grain warehouse serves as an important feature of the setting of the main house. A removal of these structures was therefore considered a significant unavoidable impact, requiring overriding consideration findings in order to approve the project. The original project proposed to remove all existing structures and develop a mixed-use complex consisting of about 31,000 square feet of commercial space and then 4,000 square feet of residential floor area. Given the historical significance of the structures of the property, the applicant submitted a revised project that retained all structures, remaining area with a three-story commercial building and 22 residential units in a detached townhouse configuration. Six of the residential units are second units located above the garages. All existing buildings are proposed to remain as with the prior submittal. Lot 14 on the tentative map is shown as an offer of dedication to the city for protection of biological resources. Our reciprocal access and parking easements are also shown between the site and the adjacent property to the west. As indicated in the memo circulated earlier to council, there are some concerns regarding public access to the site off of East Branch Street. Staff is therefore proposing that a condition be added to require evidence that all easements necessary for unimpeded public access to the site are in place. Similar to the previous project, a pedestrian path with recreational amenities is located adjacent to Tally Ho Creek. Different from the previous project, the additional porch on the smaller existing residence will be removed to help with site distance issues of the access driveway, and also add a new 5-foot-wide planter strip to be established instead of that back area. The loading dock on the back of the warehouse building is also proposed to remain. That was considered an issue with the previous proposal where they were intending to remove it. The existing stone wall is proposed to be reused to build a new raised planter, so that material will be reused. The applicant also offers to embed sections of track along the old Pacific Coast Railroad right-of-way within planter areas as a historic landmark of the previous railroad. Mitigation measure 4.4.3 further states that if it is not possible to preserve the rail bed, then documentary drawings shall be made of the historic feature to provide an archival record of its existence prior to disturbance or removal. Although the project is short by 10 parking spaces, or that's basically 11% less than development code requirements, parking is considered adequate, given that the development code allows for a 20% reduction for mixed-use projects, and that is done administratively. For discretionary in which the project was vested, so that was several years ago. The inclusionary housing requirement is therefore 10%, or 2.2 units restricted to the moderate income category. Elevations for the residential units are shown on the screen, and this is Plan A. Shows all the different elevations. And then this is Plan B. And you have this all in your packet. This slide shows the elevations for the commercial building. The applicant's representative will have a three-dimensional presentation that follows my presentation. So it'll be much more in depth. During Planning Commission review, the project was continued from the August 21st meeting based on questions specifically regarding floodplain elevations. The applicant submitted additional information regarding the floodplain analysis, which resulted in changes to the grading under the buildings, including raised finished floors by about 2 inches. And that was all the change that was necessary. And then the Planning Commission held a second public hearing on the project September 4th. Issues discussed included, you know, again, the accurate flood elevations, intensity of street lights, traffic mitigation and street improvements, recognition of historical rail bed, green building techniques, installation of bioswales, pedestrian path linkages, especially to the village area, number of bike racks, tree removal, stormwater retention, footpath to the creek, size of residential units, and undergrounding of overhead utilities. The Planning Commission recommended changes to the conditions of approval and also to the mitigation measures, and all of those have been included in the resolution that you have in your packet. They're also, the changes have been in legislative format, so it's more easy for you to see those changes. An addendum was conducted for the previously certified environmental impact report. Per the California Environmental Quality Act, an addendum is required when there is a change in the conditions analyzed in the EIR, after the EIR has been certified, but before the project has been approved. Because the project description changed to retain all existing structures and reconfigure the buildings, and because it is a lesser environmental impact, support slow green build, and that was in 2005. I have a copy of the what's called the New Home Construction Green Building Guidelines that I want to give to you. Can somebody pass this over to the council, please? I need that back, but I want you to look at it. And that was prepared by Slow Green Build as part of all of our efforts. A copy of the insert of the guidelines and the Green Point checklist was distributed earlier to the council for you to kind of take a gander at. Council might consider a condition that restricts the project to what's called, you'll see on the back of the fold-out, it's called basic green category for a total of 50 points. And you might want to encourage the developer to go all the way up to 75 points, which is called jade. So there's different ways of getting to those points, and I think that to get to the 50 points it's quite easy, and the applicant might already be there. So anyway, that's just something for you to look at. This overhead is an illustration of what the expected intersection improvements will be at the corner of LaPointe Street and Crown Terrace. It is expected that handicap ramps will be installed on the northeast, northwest, and northwest, or excuse me, southwest corners of the intersection, and sidewalks will be installed to make the necessary pedestrian path connections. So this includes sidewalk along a portion of the north side of LaPointe Street in front of Carol Firmer's house to link up with the curb on the south or the opposite side, and then sidewalk along the full length of LaPointe Street on the south side to link up to the creekside pedestrian path. That's not shown on the slide, but if you can imagine just going all the way down to the creek. The creekside path would then link up with East Branch Street sidewalk and the rest of the village by means of a defined sidewalk across the interior driveway, which would then continue between the historic Mod House and the grain warehouse. And then sidewalk is also required along the west side of Crown Terrace, with no parking on either side of the street. This slide doesn't show all of that, but you know, this is just meant to show you that intersection. So, to conclude, the Planning Commission recommends the City Council consider an addendum to the certified EIR and revised proposal for the Creekside Center project and adopt a resolution approving the project subject to the conditions of approval. I think that would be the time to ask questions of both staff and the applicant. So, thank you.
Okay, thanks. If the council is okay with it, I think we'll go ahead and have the applicant make his presentation, and then we'll do it, all of the questions and clarification. So, Mike, you're up.
Good evening, council. I'm going to let Chris Tarkan, he's the designer, in conjunction with my help. But he's going to be driving the video tonight, so I got to give him some chance to set up. Again, my name's Mike Peachy. I live at 478 Rosemary Lane here in Arroyo Grande. And I thank you, Council, for this opportunity to present our project and address the 7 years of concerns and issues that this project's created. But I think we've come to a point that it's a better project and it's an improved project. So I'll let Chris get set. I'm going to address that the project, I'm fairly new actually to the project. I didn't have to endure the 7 years that Dwayne did. So I interjected myself, since I know Dwayne professionally on other projects, I interjected to see if I could help with the project about a year ago when this council denied the last project. So I tried to identify the major issues that came out of that council hearing. And the first item was scale, mass, architecture of the office retail structure does not complement setting. Remove drives at Crown Terrace and retain existing cypress and create pedestrian links to the village. preserve historical resources, the Hildy, the Mod, and the Loomis structure, create more commercial retail opportunities, and then lastly, they felt there was inadequate public use and pedestrian amenities. So with this said, those aren't the only issues, but those were the main issues that we identified to start with that would help change this project to bring it into more of a project that the community would accept. What we did is we went out and created a three-dimensional model. So I believe we've all had a chance to see this presentation and give input. So during that process, it became a very helpful in modifying our project to help bring today the culmination of all those comments. And that pretty much took about 3 months to go through that before we were able to finally come to a point where we can make a formal application, which we started back to the ARC, received approval from ARC, seems like 2 months ago, and then Planning Commission was 3 weeks ago, received a 4-0 vote in favor of the project. So I think we're here today with the project. There's some new comments that came up, which I became aware of probably the last 20 minutes that I would eventually want to address when we get to that point. The first issue, now that we've got the project, the goal was to create a node or a point of interest, because this is going to anchor the east side of the village. Eventually, the commercial retail is going to expand past Mason Street, and eventually this is right on the edge of the transition between residential and commercial. Duane's project has a project across the street developing another transitional project which has some retail in it. This one is a combination of mixed use and commercial components. The cue here would be, and the attractiveness of this project has a lot to do with the setting and the historical nature that's already there. The main crux of the last submittal, the building was 3 stories on Crown Terrace, which really was too large at the entrance to the site. So and our goal was to try to reduce or mitigate some of those height concerns by introducing different style architecture that try to play up or be inspired by the adjacent buildings. And this building in the front, we tried to create that style architecture. And that site is very unique in character, where it starts at ground level and it slopes up to over 20 feet when you go up Crown Hill Terrace. And initially, the third story used to be closer to Crown Hill, that corner. During our meetings, we played with a 50-foot setback, and we ended up setting it back 75 foot just to help make the front building relate better to the Loomis building. And initially, I had wanted the building a little closer just to help the visual viewshed of the condos, which I thought were an eyesore from the public view. But that's my personal agenda. We were able to help move that back and still achieve the same thing. I think the goal here was we were able to relate to the size and mass to the Loomis building, preserve the view of the nice building that's right on the opposite corner. And during this process, we went through several view simulations, which, Chris, can you bring those up and show you how this model drops in the actual photograph. This view was taken from one of the condos' deck decks we went and surveyed it in and went up there and took pictures from his balcony at Chris's viewpoint standing on the deck. And then we dropped the model in, and this would be his view of the new building looking across. And the roof line, you can tell that it's real similar height of the Loomis, which surprised me. So there's no blockage of any sky, and we're well underneath some of those view concerns. There was another exhibit I thought you had, Chris. This is looking the other way. Currently, that's the storage yard with the tank farm. This is the residential component. The commercial building's on the left. And we eliminated that. So a lot of the architecture, the texture, the colors, and the articulation of materials and roofs help break up the massing, and I think it's a better project. One of the other concerns, which I picked up on the prior application, there was a two-story parking deck, and the second-story parking deck was accessible from Crown Terrace, and it was uncovered, and it was visible, and I felt that was always an eyesore. I don't believe it came up in comments, but this was one of those opportunities where you create a design that helps mitigate one issue and it helps solve another issue, which is where the third story now is now covering that parking deck, which it has a lot of benefits, which I'll eventually talk to on the green building side. So, Chris, can you show the view going down the street there? Our proposal here was we eliminated the driveways from the residence. We couldn't eliminate this driveway, and the height of this building was very challenging. And I had this discussion with one of the council members that it was very difficult and challenging to try to get the height reduced because the driveway to this parking garage is based on the elevation of that street, and we can't move the street, so we're pretty stuck to that elevation. And the current ordinance says we need a 10-foot ceiling in a covered parking garage. We've reduced it to 8-foot just to try to get the roof down. We're still 12 inches under the city's height ordinance, but I know one of the council members was trying to get it down lower, and I think we've kind of taxed it to its limits. I think I've pretty much exhausted the amenities that we did along Crown Terrace. Chris, stay on Crown Terrace. During this process, we've added a pedestrian link, which adds a walkway all the way from La Pointe. We eliminated all the driveways. There was several driveways and three guest parking spaces that used to back out in the prior proposal. So in this proposal, we've redesigned the units in this model presently. Also in this proposal, we were able to create more open space. We've relocated the guest parking that was for these units specifically. And part of this process, Milt Hayes required an easement, access easement. And in turn, the project incorporated a 6 additional parking spaces. So when Kelly said we lost 10 spaces, most of them came from the residential component, but they were relocated to Milt Hayes's property. There's 6 spaces there. When we realigned the driveway, we created 4 more spaces to help facilitate the new live-work units. There was one concern with access around, I get these two houses mixed up. Is it the Hildy house with a porch on it, or is it the Mod house? Okay, the Hildy house had a porch on the back. We decided that didn't have any historic importance to that structure. Plus, by removing it, it's going to help mitigate some of the visual on the corner. Plus, it helped add additional landscaping there. We're recycling the stone wall into a planter elsewhere on site. The revision to the Crown Hill residences, we created horizontal duplexes. We modified access, which I talked about. Architectural color are more reflective of historic vernacular. We've had several discussions of retaining the cypress, which the intent here is we're going to try to retain them. But during the construction, we may have to go out and investigate to see what trees can survive and what trees need to be removed. But the intention is keeping those trees. Also, part of this residential component, in Planning Commission, we had discussions of adding bioswells, which is a method of disconnecting your roof gutters and running the water through your landscaping, which serves as a filtering device. Plus, it helps recharge your groundwater basins. Lumis, which staff talked about. I talked about the realigning of the parking, improved circulation. We talked about removing the porch. There's a discussion of some historical reference to the railroad that used to be part of this area. And our landscape architect met with Councilman Fellows this afternoon. They came up with an alternate location and design, and I'm not sure if staff received that copy. Dwayne, do you have that handy? I have six in my, excuse me.
You might be able to throw one of these up on the overhead.
Wait, I'll you got one for the overhead? All right.
Originally, this element was discussed at being in the road, and it was decided that that wasn't going to work functionally, getting that to meld into the driveway. So I think initially this was designed in the planter above number six. And now, recently, this was designed to more of the gateway between the commercial and the residential component.
Can you point out what you're talking about so people that aren't familiar with it can...
Kelly, do we have any more of those pointers anywhere?
Group here to maybe add, approve or add the language of what could be a description of the historical history within the city of Arroyo Grande. And then here's some rails and ties on an elevated dirt and gravel bed as a symbolic gesture of that railroad. And then she's got some scattered low grasses. But this was a nice location. I would say that your public view, your public access here is the commercial component, so there's going to be a lot of traffic here pedestrian-wise. and serves as a gateway to the residential component. I'm not sure if this reflects what Debbie Black and Councilman Fellows talked about this afternoon, but I'll let him comment on that later. That includes the item C. Item D, create more commercial retail opportunities. The prior application showed these as residential units with backyards and no access to the parking here. We converted these to a live-work concept where the downstairs is more of a commercial retail with living above, which now we've tried to connect the pedestrian link with for people that come down La Pointe. There's a creek walk activity area, which was prior proposal, but there was no connectivity to the project here. So in adding the parking and changing the use here, we've now created a different style mixed use, which included this pedestrian link, which now we've got walkway that comes across here. Planning Commissioner Barnish had suggested another link here, which I think in our plans we show it at this location. Rob Strong and I had talked about it yesterday, and I think we were on different pages, and I think Rob was thinking that it was here and then it would continue all the way down here, and I was thinking it would come here and then come across and down the front and eventually tie to the public sidewalk. So I'd have to say it still had some of the details works well with a mixed use, and I think it worked well in this case. Lastly, item E, inadequate public use and pedestrian amenities. The project has created a public sidewalk link from La Pointe and Crown Terrace to the village, which we talked about coming down this way, which connects here. We've created a covered parking area, which I think is amenity to the residents above. And it has some heat island effect, which you're shading your parking lots, which is a green build concept. We've created a small public plaza, some built-in seating on the hill here, which could be informal planter seating events. That's not intended to be grass, but it's more of a plaza. We talked about the historic landmark. Architectural massing is more pedestrian friendly. I have to put a pitch in for architecture. We've recycled the stone wall into the project into a planter. The creek walk link I just talked about is now connecting from La Pointe all the way here, and then somewhere in here we're going to get it out to this public way. The play structure and the creek enhancement is another benefit to the community, and it's open to the public. And, you know, from a commercial standpoint, this helps reduce traffic to the users that are on site. They can now bring their lunches. They don't need to, they can walk down and get lunch at one of the cafes, or they can sit here by the creek and enjoy lunch. So this helps reduce traffic and air quality in the long term. Enhanced landscaping along here in conjunction with the cypress has been created. We've improved the commercial circulation because of the Milt-Hayes agreement. And we've talked about the links here. And lastly, which Kelly had mentioned, incorporating the green build concepts. I think it's the wave of the future. That's a pretty California way to go. Oops. And the local chapter in the AIA met with the city of San Luis Obispo a year ago, and San Luis was going to adopt the same thing that you're mentioning tonight as trying to set a threshold and a standard based on, in this particular case, it was LEED, which is they're using. What you mentioned tonight was more of a home building checklist, which is, applies to more home building. LED is, in my understanding, is more encompassing. It covers all buildings, environments, and development. And the point systems are different because you had mentioned 50 points and 75. LEED version 2.2, 2005 edition, has 69 possible points. And to be certified, you have to achieve 26 points. And then they have levels like silver, gold, and platinum. Well, where I was going with this is the city had met with the local AIA chapter and said, this is what we want to adopt. How can we integrate this into the community? And the local AIA said that this was still a very new concept, new principles. There's because we live in where we live, a lot of resources aren't available. A lot of the professionals, like myself, aren't accredited. A lot of us are going through the accreditation process. Trying to get certified is a whole different animal. There's a lot of cost involved. And implementing it was difficult. So they all decided that let's introduce a checklist, which just requires each project to come to the table with a checklist of these are things that our project can provide or is providing, but it wasn't a mandating them to provide it. It was more educational. I know they are requiring a LEED certification when you're exceeding 60,000 square feet, and that's something they've adopted. But for smaller projects, houses, and smaller buildings, they haven't adopted that level. So I would suggest that I think the green building checklist is a good idea, and I think it would be nice to have the ability as a professional and the community to be involved in that process. So tonight, you know, 20 minutes ago, when I first said that this is fellows, we had this discussion yesterday. So I went through the 85-page document and LEED to show that these are some of the things that this project has done basically by design. A lot of points are created by the fact that you're doing infill, compact urban form. You're reducing the taxation on boundary expansions that everybody is against is urban sprawl. So yeah. A lot of this project incorporates density, community linkage, and we've talked about some bioswale concepts. And there's a lot of other issues when it comes to green building, like building materials. There's things that I use every day that didn't realize that was a green build concept, like LVLs. It's a pre-manufactured beam. Instead of a beam made out of lumber, it's particle beams that are engineered. So there's a lot of things that we've already incorporated in our practice. In this project, we'll be using those. So that pretty much covers my presentation, and I appreciate all the work that you've been involved with this project in getting to this point today. And I'm sure there's other questions and issues that you want to talk to. So, and I know Dwayne's going to want to talk to some of those points, so I'll be available for any comments. And thank you.
Okay, thank you. You might not want to go too far away. Right. All right, this is the time for the council to ask any questions or seek clarification on either Kelly's portion of the staff report or Mike's presentation. Anyone have any questions or clarifications? Okay. Councilmember Fellows, why don't you go first?
In the staff report, Kelly, I think it was shown that we were seven parking spaces short. You mentioned 10, and Michael corrected that without mentioning a number. So where do we stand now?
It's as it stands in the staff report. What I was saying was that there was 10 spaces that were taken away from the original project. Like, for instance, up above on Crown Terrace, there were guest parking spaces there. There was also parking where they were going to take out the back portion of
so that.
Yeah, there's going to be an HOA. Yes,
it would be an HOA to mm-hmm. maintain. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then this is probably for Tim. This has to do with the ceiling height. Are we approving a non-standard ceiling height if we approve this project tonight?
Are you talking about the parking structure?
The parking structure.
I'm afraid I'm not able to answer that question.
It's a building code question.
Well, I guess if we approve a project in which we know that the building height is wrong, then would they then have to come back and get approval for essentially what they presented tonight? Are we creating a variance? And you're telling me you don't know if we are.
Well, certainly not a legal variance. I mean, you may be deviating from an approved code that we have on our books, which is not in and of itself illegal.
But if we approve the project tonight, would we in fact be approving the, not necessarily a change of our code, but in this case a change of an exception to the code?
Again, I don't have an exact answer, but yes, if it's more than is allowed in the Uniform Building Code, then yes.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There were a couple things that were eliminated from, I guess, the original proposal or even what was proposed by the applicant. One was a footpath to the creek. Where exactly is that? Was that? And I got a little bit of reading the minutes from the Planning Commission why it was deleted. There was some concern about the usage, but I'm not sure what's been deleted.
With the original EIR, there was a mitigation measure that said that the project should, and this is when, you know, the original project was being evaluated, which included commercial pretty much right next to the creek. The rationale, they wanted a pedestrian path, some kind of a footpath to the creek, with the thinking that people are going to do it anyway, so you don't want you want a formal path to go down the creek instead of people creating their own footpaths and having many, many footpaths down to the creek because they're going to do it anyway. There was discussion at the Planning Commission that, it's a good place for kids to learn about, you know, the biology of a creek and things of that nature. I think the consensus of the commission at that point, though, was that if you create a path down there, then you're possibly creating more environmental damage. Any kind of precedent we're following, what's already, you know, precedents that have already been set.
Okay. The deletion of the gate, what was the I couldn't even find that in the notes or the minutes. I could only find that they actually voted against separating the two sections because at one point there was a look back to put a gate possibly in. It sounded at one point that there was going to be a gate, and now there's no gate. And I'm wondering what the rationale there is.
Well, I think it's going back a while with regards to when the gate was even in there. It's been eliminated for quite a while. But the rationale before was to eliminate people going down LaPointe Street, cutting through the project, and going to East Branch Street. I think what ended up happening was that it's more of a pain to go through the project to try to get out, that people really wouldn't use it as a cut-through, and that the residential component, you know, when you want to have good access to parking to make it true mixed use and make the parking work, then you just need to make it more open.
Now, from what I can tell looking at the parking plan, there really isn't any excess parking within the residential where any commercial component would use anything in the residential, so the question really is more of whether the residential would use the commercial. Is that correct?
That seems to be the case, yeah.
Now, was there any consideration of the fact that it'll be easier to use coming off of Crown Terrace, am I right, the right off of Branch,
mm-hmm.
And cutting into the residential there instead of going around? I guess what I'm looking at is whether or not we're going to be impacting a difficult access point right now coming out of the project and whether we want to encourage as much traffic as possible, specifically the residential, to go out the back way instead of having it come out through the commercial. Was there any consideration of that, either in a traffic study or discussions?
That hasn't been discussed, actually, in recent conversations with the revised project at SAC. Previous traffic analyses, I think that the gate was more or less something that council or planning commission at some point wanted to see it, and so they put it in, and then it was decided that it wasn't something that they really wanted. There wasn't anything, it had nothing to do with the traffic analysis, basically, because the level of service is still so good that it's not really an issue. So, okay.
And then the last one, back to parking a little bit, is with the building 7 and 8 being, if those two buildings were to want to become either 50% commercial or 100% commercial, do we have any idea of how underparked we could potentially be?
Well, we know right now that we are 11% underparked, and they can go up to 20% administratively, and they can go up to 30% with a use permit. If somebody was to want to convert, say, one of those live-work units to 100% commercial, they would have to go through a use permit process and prove that there is sufficient parking, whether it's by a parking reduction or, basically that's what they would have to do, because it'd be hard to try to create another parking space without taking out landscaping or something.
So right now, if they even wanted to convert the garages, they would have to go through that. They wouldn't be able to just use the...
Yes, they would have to go through a use permit process, certainly.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Kelly, this area right here, this is a public path. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes.
Okay. How far away from this path are the backs of these residences or side of these residences?
I don't know specifically. I would defer that to Michael Peachy, since we're sharing in these questions.
Okay. I got it right here. This one here is roughly 19 feet. Do these residents have any option for privacy? Where's the property line in? In other words, could they put up a fence or any type of a backyard?
There is not a fencing plan that has been proposed at this time. I would assume that there is going to be fencing that encumbers their personal backyard space. Michael, do you want to address that further?
Unfortunately, that part of the project wasn't proposed to change from the prior application, so I haven't really even looked at that component of the application. I've been focusing more on all the design elements. There's six residences that we haven't really changed from the prior application that was before you. So we haven't. I couldn't address that. Maybe Dwayne could probably help you with that.
Proximity of a public path with the privacy of either backyards or side yards, so that you don't have members of the public coming across here and looking in windows and doors and things like that, which is sort of unavoidable when you have that kind of close proximity. So that was my only concern, is whether or not there would be some sort of a screening option or landscaping option available to people who purchase these homes. Or have you gotten that far?
Dwayne DeBlau. We have not gotten that far on the relationship to the lot lines with respect to the creek. There will be additional survey work that's done out there to make sure we're tying ourselves in more accurately. And at that time, we want to make sure we integrate some sort of screening with that area if there's going to be some public access along there.
Well, I think what might resolve the issue is simply a line of landscaping, trees or evergreens or something that just meanders along with that path. And to the extent that, it might preserve some of the, west view shed of the people who live there, but yet provide some lower story privacy for them as well. So that might be an easy fix. I was just wondering if you had given it any thought. Also, Mike, could you, or Dwayne, since you're up there, could you elaborate a little bit more? Could we blow that up, this area here? You say it's not going to be grass, so what are people going to see when they come in here and look this way? Are we going to have benches? Are we going to have define what you mean by plaza?
Well, the plaza, I saw that as more of a hardscape material so that it could facilitate people bringing seating out, having events there. The seating is actually built into a terrace. The hill steps up there as Crown Terrace goes up the hill. So there's some terracing on the side, which accommodates some informal landscape seating. So the plaza is more of pavers, porous pavers, or some kind of hardscape. But it's not grass as you see it in front of you.
Okay.
I think she was looking at my model. So that's a mistake.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
And I would see those trees would be movable so that you could open that up to create. So those would be kind of trees that you could put in a planter that can move and adjust to any kind of function in that plaza. That's my vision.
Okay. Thank you. The other question I had, and Councilmember Fellows, if you wanted to, you know, if you want to jump in on this one, fine. But this is actually a question for you, Tim, and that's the addendum that we have in front of us with regard to the easements for public access, and it's listed as condition 116 that we were going to add on. What is the current wording of that agreement?
That's in your packet as attachment 3 to the staff report from October 24th, 2006. It's a 4 or 5 page document, but the issue is really quite specific, and it relates to the scope of intended use of the easement.
You know, I looked through here, and I couldn't find the darn thing.
It's 93 pages back.
It is difficult to find. I can read you whatever you like, the portion that is a little bit ambiguous.
Okay, why don't you read the part that you want to have expanded?
First, let me sort of just take a minute and explain what I... And I have to... thank Councilmember Fellows with regard to this issue because he flagged it. The specific wording is in paragraph 5. It's actually throughout the instrument because the instrument doesn't delineate with specificity the purpose of the easement. The purpose of the easement is to be used in conjunction with a commercial development. The scope that's actually written, a little bit of an ambiguity, that's section 5 where it says, the easements granted herein are for the exclusive mutual use of Hayes, Brown, DBM, and no other parties shall be allowed access or use thereof. Exclusivity is a real legal term of art, but the way it's used there, at least in my mind, convolutes and clouds the issue of who was intended to benefit by this. I think clearly the parties intended it to benefit the development so that there would be reciprocal easements and the public can have ingress and egress to it, but that's really not what it says. And my concern is that unless that's clarified, it could become an issue down the line. That's paragraph 5 on page 2 of the document itself. Typically, you'd want the recitals to at least give you a roadmap as to why you're drafting this instrument, what its intention is, what its purpose is, and there are no recitals. No recitals of any use in that regard. So I'm hoping that can be clarified.
Okay. I guess my question on this is, to what degree can reasonable, or the rule of reasonableness be applied to this? If we're focusing, if we're identifying property owners and rights of access, it would seem to me that it would be reasonable to assume that we're not just talking about those people individually. We're talking about the use of the property. That's number one. Number two, when you have an access agreement that stipulates maintenance costs and upkeep and insurance costs and upkeep that are passed on to adjacent property owners as part of the access agreement, that it would assume use of that access by whatever development occurs on that property. So I guess I guess the bottom line is I'm not that concerned about it, but I wanted to clarify that with you.
Certainly, and maintenance is a component of every easement, so in and of itself that's meaningless to me. That's a very narrow way of stating that this easement is to be used in conjunction with a commercial development. Normally, you'd have some expansive wording indicating invitees. And I understand that this won't be an easy process, and it may be that not much more is necessary than perhaps a letter from the participants indicating the purpose of the easement. So we have something in the record indicating at this time when it was drafted that was the purpose of the easement.
Well, I'm happy that you added the last part of that. And once again, it's not just the maintenance. It's the whole issue of liability and everything taken as a whole. Okay. All right, I think those were all of the questions that I had. Any other questions or clarifications only at this time?
I do have some more, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Okay. I think I did bring up to Michael Peachy yesterday the comment he made during the Planning Commission meeting regarding green build techniques that could be added in. We had a long conversation about that, as he mentioned, and I think he may there may be a little bit more explanation coming. My question of Michael would be, or Dwayne would be, since the green build process versus LEED is so much less onerous, perhaps I shouldn't use the word onerous, but it's so much less time consuming and it's shorter, why you wouldn't, and it's a voluntary process, sort of an educational process, why you wouldn't consider just filling out the checklist for this. I think we eventually need to get the green build process, the LEED process going in town here. There's a lot of talk about it. We need to move forward with it. Start the dialogue here and so on. I wonder what you feel about at least giving some making some motion in that direction.
Thanks, Councilman. I agree with that concept in general. Part of me is I'm not familiar with that document. I'm familiar with the LEED document. So to make comment on whether 50 points or 75 points is achievable, I can't tell you.
Okay.
So I need some time to research that. And it's specific to more house. I'm used to doing commercial buildings. But I'm sure they're similar in nature. They just don't compare with the point system. They're different.
Okay. Thanks for that. This is a question, I think, for Kelly. Kelly, the pedestrian access in one, at least some part in the staff report, or I may be somewhat less likely to go along here in this way. But so anyway, the question remains, since it's somewhere in the staff report that this is where it's going to be, do the Browns know about that, since that's their property?
If they read the staff report and the conditions of approval and the mitigation measures, they would, but I don't know that for a fact. I haven't told them specifically. I haven't had any conversation with the Browns.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. Okay, Don Spagnuolo, Director of Public Works, everyone for you. During the last Planning Commission look at this, I think it must have been Planning Commissioner Tate made a comment regarding the Bridge Street culvert is not sufficient to handle a 100-year flood. I talked to you about this a little bit earlier today, and I think and your answer sort of satisfied me, but I thought it might be worthwhile to for you to mention it again, since there will be a flood one of these days, and it'll back up at that point, I think.
Well, you know, the project, they did an analysis of the flood potential with the culvert blocked, and I think that is probably going to be not only is a flood a rare, you know, that magnitude of flood a rare event, but also blocking of that entire culvert would also be somewhat of a rare event. So I'm not that concerned that those two events would happen at the same time. So I don't think that the culvert, I think that the culvert will be able to operate and alleviate some of the stormwater.
And you mentioned something I hadn't thought about, and that is much of the stormwater in an event like that is coming from out in the county, far out in the watershed. Mm-hmm. Not much is coming from this project, especially if there's some, I guess the bioswales aren't going to help in a flood event. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, to ask the applicant to make a contribution to eventually enlarging that culvert would not be worthwhile because their contribution to the water would be very small?
Exactly. I mean, most of the water from that contributes to that culvert comes upstream, a lot of it from the county area, and the project would be contributing a very minor amount. So if you try to calculate what the amount that they would be contributing would be a very small dollar amount if you compare it to the actual cost improvements.
Okay, thank you. And then another Public Works question regarding COA, Condition of Approval 52. Let me find it. Which is on my page 21, mentions Constructal Point Street adjacent. That is a condition of approval of the project to be. And then a question of Kelly and I think of the city attorney. Mitigation measure 4.4.1 is mentioned on the 35th page. And it sounds like a good one, but I did again. It mentions that it would be requiring the new owner of the property of the historic buildings, that's the Browns, to register the main residence in the California Register of Historic Places. That would be a good thing for the community. Do they know about that requirement? Have they agreed to it?
My answer is the same as I had before.
Oh.
It's always
maybe
been.
Maybe they are, but maybe they aren't.
Right. I would defer that to the applicant.
Well, I can address the both the issues on the issue of the pathway across the parking lot to connect maybe the public pathway north-south to the barn area. The Browns were at one of the preliminary meetings that we had, so they've heard of that. Browns have been very, very cooperative in trying to make everything go and move ahead as much as we could, even to the extent where they offered, you know, to move one of the two houses if it was necessary. So they have not officially put everything down as, yes, we're going to agree. And I guess the reason it's gotten to this point is the original project really was meant to focus on the property surrounding the barn with the intent to provide, you know, future use and parking for that facility. But the whole intent was to always have that property come back at a later date when there's something that they were wanting to get approved. And then at that point, they would be getting, you know, the requirements that the city would ask of them. So, you know, at this stage, I was actually caught off guard that, you know, I saw a condition placed on the Browns, who really don't have any additional economic incentive to suddenly tie up some of their properties. We can definitely work with the Browns, and they've been working with us, and I feel confident that we can get the pathway. I felt that it was a lot to ask if they haven't come up with a project to get approved to ask them to go to the historical register at that,
which is
Oh, about streetlights?
It's on the 21st page back. It seems to me that it's incorrect as it's written.
Yeah, we can eliminate and Crown Terrace because we want to make it so that it's just really strictly for commercial and not on the residential portion. So that's fine.
Okay. And that brings up a question of the project lights within the project. Are they going to be hooded down, whatever you call it, downcast lights?
They would have to abide by the development code standards, which talks about light candles and light spillage onto adjacent residential areas. So they would have to show that they aren't doing that within the parking lot, you know, area. The light standards are a little bit different. I mean, what we've included here is that per the Planning Commission request, you know, to shorten the light standards a little bit and put some shields on them so that it's really directed towards the pedestrians and doesn't spill over to any of the residential.
Thank you. I have one more question, Michael. Would you come to the podium, please? Now, I talked to you about a concern that I shared with some of the neighbors regarding the fact that the central portion of the building, it's back a little ways up Crown Terrace, is fairly tall. And I think your explanation to me satisfied me, but I'd like to hear it. I'd like these folks from the neighborhood to hear it also regarding the fact that something I hadn't thought of, and you mentioned earlier, is that the second level of the parking garage is at street level. So I mentioned to you on the phone, I never did like the fact that the second level of the parking garage was the cars were visible. And I said to you, you put a roof on it, and then you put a building on top of it. Why did you do that?
We had talked about this, the process where we experimented with moving the third floor further away to help reduce the scale and mass of the front or the entranceway. And in that process, we experimented with those visuals that we showed you earlier. The height and the architecture is reflected in the design. And when you start replicating, trying to tie into the design with the old barn, the roof slopes create an additional height with my structure to make my parking. The ordinance, which I think I've had discussions with Rob Strong on the 10-foot high component of covered parking, was a boilerplate that is carried over, and I've had to address it in several projects here in town, and we've always addressed it from the building code side. So we've been able to mitigate that 10-foot component. You'd asked me what the plate heights were at the office level, and right now they're designed to be 8-foot. And because of the pitch of the roof, we can do some scissor trusses to try to get volume in there. I normally try to go 9-foot minimum in commercial offices, but because we're in this tight envelope and we wanted to stay underneath that height limit, we've made some adjustments. And it created some additional design components. Normally in this architecture, you see that 8 and 12 pitch with in conjunction with a 2 and 12, just like the barn. So we were able to reduce the height by introducing that same design component on that third level, and you'll see that component from this view that we've introduced those details. So we've taken a lot of effort to try to get the height down, but like I said, we're kind of stuck to the height of the second floor parking garage. It is where it is because of the level of that street. There's a 20-foot hill that we're building that building into. So you could almost qualify this building as a two-story over basement from a building code standpoint. And that definition is that if you're over 5 foot below grade, more than 50% of the project, which I've got 20-foot walls against the earth,
Michael,
against that street.
A little bit beyond my answer that I needed, but thank you very much.
Okay, I'm trying to explain the height issue, which is a component of the street elevation, okay, access point, and interior elements that you and I talked about.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you. All right. This is a public hearing. The applicant has concluded your presentation. Anybody else for the applicant? All right. What I'd like to do now is open it up for general public comment on 9B. If you would, please be mindful of the three-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole. I'm sorry, the applicant was not done. All right.
I was staying. But we felt just from a community standpoint that, with the landscaping plan that was provided by a professional designer who also worked closely with one of our planning commissioners, it just seemed like it was a better way to go ahead with some more heritage-type trees that are going to be actually more representative in the long term for the community and work on either thinning the cypress trees, removing them, but doing something that's, more of a long-term benefit than a shorter lifespan cypress tree. So that's all I had to say on that. The intersection improvements that are at LaPointe and Crown Terrace that you saw showing ADA at all four corners and the stop bars, we're happy to cooperate with the city on that, but also to clarify with the city and from our standpoint, our nexus is our property boundaries with respect to our improvement requirements typically. We don't see a nexus for improvements that are across the intersection on the northwest corner and the northeast corner. That's something that's typically done, or in cooperation with the city if there are some improvements to be done on the other side of the street. And along that same line, the right-of-way question about LaPointe being 40 feet curb to curb. Again, that was discussed with Public Works, and I think clarification-wise, we are going to be building our half width. We're not going to be taking out another 20 feet of somebody else's front yard across the way unless there was some project that was going to be, approved on that property. So which is the typical development process. You deal with, your frontage, and you don't go ahead and move your right-of-way, but there's enough room within that improvement to still facilitate the traffic flow for those two residences, and then obviously the driveway that extends out of the north of the project. On parking, it was my understanding with the two buildings that are mixed use on the east-west running driveway, we did add two additional parking spaces for those buildings, for each of those buildings, so that there would be some future potential use there. I don't know if that made it into the 11%, but that's definitely what our layout does show. It sort of worked its way in as we continued to start working with easements and so forth, and then, at some point it made it as a condition, which we didn't expect, but we really felt that the whole initiative was to provide a facilitating device with our development to be sensitive to their future conditional use permit that they would come forward with at another time. But at this point, it seemed like that was a premature condition. So our opinion is we don't feel it should be placed on the Browns to go to that extent as a condition. When they do come with a project, it seems like that's the best time for them to be placed with those conditions. So, and I believe that's all I had. I guess the one more comment on the green build requirements. We've definitely been, obviously following some of that. We get it in some of our building literature as well. But it really, to us, seems like it's something that needs to have some public input. I don't feel that, just being told, hey, you need to make a 50-point requirement on a standard that we haven't examined or looked at or has had no public input from the community, it just seems premature for us. One thing we do is, many of the things we do based on code and planning requirements already are in some of those plans already. And I can just say in one instance on a building that's across the road that we've gotten close to completing, we've added economy packages to our air conditioning units that utilize, you know, the ambient air outside when it can to cool the inside of a building. And those are things that aren't required, but we've done them anyway out of, you know, just being conscious of some of those things. But to us, it feels, we don't feel that we should be put on some sort of a point system. We'd like to, we'd be happy with some encouragement to do that or to, you know, work at some of that with staff to increasing it. But we didn't feel that at this late stage, that's something that would work well for us on the project. So we appreciate your contributions on the process, and we just look forward to getting some approval tonight. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. All right, now.
The part you see over there is part of our property. We own the two houses on that island that is between Crown Hill and Branch. And we feel there's a pretty heavy impact on our property because of this development that creates some problems for us. And I'm just going to name them off quickly so I don't take too much of your time. One of which is the neighborhood meetings. We didn't personally get any notices. We don't live there full-time. We have a tenant on one, and the other one is a second home for us until we retire. And so, but there was no notices left on our door, in our mailbox, anything that we saw for neighborhood meetings. One of the concerns we have is that it's no longer going to be a quiet residential neighborhood, which is when we wanted a residential place, that's one of the things we were looking at. We think the streets are narrow on Crowden Hill and LaPointe, and I understand they addressed some of those issues. Unfortunately, both of our houses there have off-street parking, and I think, and that little plaza over there is actually almost directly across from one of our houses, and so all those events, they're not going to drive all the way back there to park. They're going to park on the street right there on both sides where our house is, and then the noise and stuff issues will have a big impact for any kind of gatherings right there across our street. We're also concerned about the construction disruption, the length of time that's going to be happening for our properties there. And the commercial on both sides of, both on Branch on the other side and on Crown Hill this side, now leaves us in a difficult situation since we're zoned residential. And one of our questions is going to be, you know, when we have to go sell it, who's going to want to buy a residential house right there when it's surrounded? And, you know, yes, yours is mixed use, but in all reality, it's commercial mixed use. And I think that makes a huge difference when somebody's looking to buy somewhere nice and quiet residential. And the noise, I said. And then also, if we decided to come in a couple of years and present the council with a plan for turning ours into a commercial, are we going to be denied because there's already so much traffic and so much everything else going on that, you know, it can't support anymore? That would be another of our concerns. And I don't like to maybe build in some off-street parking for ourselves now, since we're not going to have access easily to street parking at this point. And we're going to have to figure out some way to abate the noise from that plaza thing to our house. One of the things we're looking at now is perhaps this would be the time to do a zone change to commercial for our lots also, at the same time that this is happening, to assure that we can get the zone change that we would need and wouldn't have a loss of value. But of course, if we did that now, of course, there's whatever cost is involved in doing the loan change, and we're private owners, so we don't even have a clue what that would entail, other than I know there's has to be, you know, the architect and whatever else you guys do to change zoning. So, and then the cost for concerting all that. And then the last part is on our property at each East Branch, there is a historic 100-year wall kind of a deal. And if if we wanted to get the zoning to commercial, that would have to be dealt with, and that would be present problems for anybody coming in and building commercial, because you wouldn't necessarily have access if that wall had to remain in place. And so I thought maybe you guys should just take the wall and move it over there between the residential and the pathway for your creek, and now you have privacy and the 100-year-old wall, and we wouldn't have to deal with it. Bill?
I think our main concern is the commercial area and the corner of La Pointe there and Crown Hill. That's a pretty steep hill. It's a little misleading on this picture. And we've already had accidents involving cars parked and people coming from that street over. And now you're looking at, you know, 80 more cars every day. I'm not sure whether that really is going to be feasible with the way the streets are.
And then I guess my last thing that I saw is that driveway into the parking, and this is fairly minor, but I didn't see a stop sign there, and I really think there needs to be one, because the people making that turn from East Branch where it goes into Crown Hill, they sort of take it a little bit fast sometimes, and I can see that would be a problem. So I think if there was a stop sign there coming out of that driveway, that would go a ways to mitigating any problems.
I mean, there's already parking problems there. That
Anyone else?
I'm Kam Ayarad, and I reside at 534 Allen in the Village, and our business is the Chameleon at 415 East Branch, and you guys all know me from before, and we just want to say how grateful we are that the council made the decision, 8 months ago, in denying the first project, and how doubly grateful we are that the DeBlaus had the perseverance to come forward and the patience to come forward with such a wonderful improvement. Yes, there are going to be challenges. It is going to be more traffic, but I think they've done a beautiful job of supplying plenty of parking for the businesses, for the residences. There are existing problems right now, but I think with time it will be able to be solved. And then we just had one comment. We hope that it is written somewhere that they do have to observe during construction that our water main won't get cut off at any point, because it is right where that red parking garage is located, the water for the entire project. And then we were kind of hoping that maybe they meant by coloring the barn that pretty kind of mustardy gold color, that maybe they were going to include painting the barn for us, because we would really like that color. And it should only take about 50,000 gallons of paint. But other than that, it looks great, and we really hope that this will be approved and go through very, very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Good evening. My name is Barbara Friel. I live on the southeast corner of La Pointe and Crown Terrace. And Kelly, can you put up the slide that shows that intersection? Before she does, I have a question. None of us in the neighborhood surrounding this project received notice that this project was on the agenda tonight. That's why there's very few of us here. So I have a question about that and how people being directly impacted by a project like this are notified, other than standing down in front of City Hall and checking each week to see if it's on the agenda. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Susan Flores, 529 East Branch Street. I think I've been to every meeting on this project from the get-go, from the architectural review to SAC to planning to City Council, planning City Council. I very much like the project. I think this is an improved project. They have gone to great lengths and have taken out, the entrances that were on Crown Terrace for eliminating the residential entrances, which I think was three or four, which is, they had to change the whole building, and I think made a considerable financial change in that matter. I like the idea that there's, they've made pathways, that they've turned some of the buildings into a mixed use. I think that's a really good fix on the opposing vintage houses. The other thing is, as far as registering the houses, we have the HRC now in place, and I believe through their process, being there just beginning, that will happen for a number of properties that are in the village. I myself am working on my own because I'm one of the first five on the list, so I'm trying to help that committee to backdate on mine. A lot of times people don't register their properties because you need the know-how, which is part of what will come out of this committee. So I think talking about the Bakers registering it, you know, you've got to give them all the information as to what is taking place with our new committee. I slightly sympathize with the people that own the property on the triangle. However, there are a lot of remedies, including permit parking, that could be done in the future. I myself live across the street from the other De Blau project, which is commercial mixed use. And, have brought up different issues of concerns and stuff. But the overall appearance of the improvement of the property, what it's going to benefit the village area, and this property will benefit even more. And living in the vicinity, that you can actually rhyme energy, money to get it right. And I really see that they have addressed all the oppositions that have happened in the last 7 years, I think. So good luck to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Mike McConville at 529 East Branch Street. Daily walks around this neighborhood impressed me as a area that's in transition at this point. And it's going to probably be the borderline of residential and commercial. It's already doing that now. People that live in the area have got to understand that that's where it's going. It's a shame because if people have owned property for some time, things like that, it's the complexion will change, of course. What I've witnessed in the last 5-7 years is that the De Blaus have really made a lot of sacrifices in projects. I know that going through this process with the city council, the planning, and, of course, ARC and anything else they got to do, it's quite a compromise. And I think they've done a really good job. I think that this project tonight should go ahead with some of the concerns that you've raised tonight. I think they're valid. And get it going and get it done. I'd like to see the project across the street from me. Buildings, done, but you can only do so much at a given time. But the Blau folks build a good project, and I think we should go ahead with this thing. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Good evening, gentlemen. Karen Ray, 265 Miller Way, and the chair of the Planning Commission. I'm here to speak tonight to encourage you to discuss and possibly add creek access via footpath to the Creekside development. As its name suggests, this project includes the creek in a very accessible area, and at the Planning Commission meeting, very little discussion happened with regards to whether access in the form of a path should be designed into the project. It was obvious that our shorthanded commission would not support the project if it included access, but the outcome might have been different with a full commission. After looking at Teresa's draft creek study and speaking with both her and Gary Sherquist, I'm convinced that a well-designed access to the creek and the creek frequented by the public and they're kept cleaner. In other words, if it's just an area where access is relatively easy, it will happen whether we want it to or not. No access just isn't a possibility, so we need to control how it happens. Also, this is not a vacuum. We are not just talking about scientific merits of access. We're talking about balancing the goals of the general plan, which include recreational opportunities, economic development, visual amenities, among others. When creek access is balanced with the many goals of the general plan, it becomes clearer that access in this area is potentially warranted. What about foot traffic from Tally Ho through the well-designed pedestrian connection? Another consideration is the coming Scolaris project, which I've not yet seen. What, if any, access has been designed there? How will the projects vis-a-vis the creek interact? This is exactly where we should be designing access, not in the middle of a residential development. The other two projects mentioned earlier by Kelly, including Cherry Creek and Fair Oaks, where we did not approve access, those are entirely residential projects. This one is mixed use. We should design access here as a highlight of our village character. The Creekside mixed-use project has been designed to be an integral part of the village. It has specific features designed to bring the public into the project, including the plaza and seating area, the open space with the DG path, and historic resources such as highlighting the railroad and the historic buildings. It's a natural place to include the creek as a design element, not as something to be hidden away. Like in the heart of the village, people should be invited to enjoy it, not just to know it's there. This is an area where children in the residences will play. The junior high school kids will go there whether we want them to or not. Families will visit the businesses and enjoy lunch in the open space by the creek. I urge you to consider including the creek both for the enjoyment of the community and to highlight it as a source of pride, which will do more for conservation than shutting it out. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Mayor, can I have about 30 seconds?
If you've got new ground to cover, sure.
It was
if you would come up to the podium and restate your name.
I appreciate it. It's Debbie Murphy again. It's been characterized as a parking problem, and that's an issue that really isn't our main concern. Our main concern is what are we going to do about the noise, and also, if you're looking at Branch, the residential on Branch and the commercial on Branch, Branch is a very wide street, and so it's not as much of an impact. But on Crown Hill, it's a narrow, formerly residential street, and so there is a very much larger impact.
That little triangle there, is that village mixed use as well as across the street?
Well, I know the very tip of it is owned by the city.
Yes, it was donated.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it, isn't it right? Isn't it? Oh, it is single family. Okay.
So you're right directly across from village mixed use.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Last chance. Going once, going twice. We will close the public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back to the council. And Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start us off this evening?
Well, I think most of you know that when this came up the first time, I did vote in favor of the past one. I do think this is, in fact, a pretty clear improvement over that. I think the most important thing is that the scale was addressed here, that it was pushed off of the corner of Crown Hill and Crown Terrace. It's still a very tall building, but it's tall in a more appropriate location. I do think that the articulation of breaking up that what was originally designed to be a giant barn, I'll call it, is now broken up into what at least looks like several buildings, and in fact will look like a smaller building for that reason. The pedestrian access is somewhat improved. It's not a lot different than it was, but I do think that there's clear improvement there. The basis of the project, I'm certainly prepared to go forward with it this evening. I do want to address a couple of the issues. On the green build issue, I really think, and this is another example that I know I kind of rant about this from time to time, but this is another example of where we actually have, instead of setting a policy, we're trying to establish a policy within a project. And I really think this is another example where we really need to go back. And although we've certainly adopted the concept of that we want to see green build, we haven't actually told people how we're going to implement it. I do think before we start just I don't think you'd have a lot of trouble meeting this 50 points from what I understand it would be, but I do think we have to spell that out up front and do that through a more formal process to where everybody knows exactly what we're approving. I do think clearly as far as requiring this one little short 10-15-foot segment of sidewalk on the opposite corner, trouble with directions, northwest corner here in this picture, I do think clearly that's probably an unfair burden for the applicant when we at least have some disagreement already about a lot of ways that we could get that done. But this particular instance, I can see both sides of this. I mean, it really it's probably something that would happen anyway, but it might be very, very desirable to have it at this time. So I'll be open to certainly listening to the rest of the council on that. Creek access, I would agree this is an urban location. It's very different than the residential locations. I personally think it's kind of thin that the educational level is for children is better than the damage that they're likely to do given access. On the other hand, it is an urban location. There's going to be a lot of people hopefully walking through this area. I'm open to listening to the council on that. I think one alternative here is to turn this over to Fish and Game. I think Fish and Game would probably take the more scientific approach here in that they would want to restrict access, even if it's not reasonable that it would take place here in this location. I suppose on the issue on the property across the street, I mean, this has been a project for 6, 7, 8 years. So this has been coming for a long, long time. So I'm sympathetic that you're going to be impacted, but this has actually been a commercial property for more than 100 years. Adjacent to a residential is just going to be a bigger commercial project. So as far as the rezoning of the property, I suppose that's always a possibility. We'll always look at that, but I certainly don't think that the rezoning of that property would be driven by this project. That would be a process unto itself on whether that's a desirable, whether it's desirable or not. And I think I've covered all the issues. So, I'm prepared to move forward with this project this evening, and I'm open on the two unresolved issues. Certainly, I'm open to listening to counsel on those.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to echo a few of the things that Mr. Guthrie just said. First, I want to talk about the parking. The project allows for a 20% reduction, so it does meet the parking that's necessary on site. So I'm not going to make an issue of that. I'm very happy to see that the driveways from the residences have been eliminated coming out on Crown Terrace, and that the driveway that still exists is coming out of the parking lot where people will not be backing out, which makes a rather significant difference. So I'm not going to be in opposition to the driveway coming out of the parking structure there. I think that that's a lot safer, and it's a much better improvement over what we had before.
The red line is the curb line, and the yellow line is the right-of-way line.
And what are we proposing be done in the northwest corner?
The northwest corner, there's a ramp there now. In the southwest corner, there would be a ramp that would be constructed on that corner, and then a sidewalk leading south to a point where there'd be another crosswalk that would cross onto this particular project.
So are we specifying that something needs to be done on the northwest corner?
It would be the southwest corner that would be most impacted.
Southwest and not the northwest. Yeah. And which is the southwest? I may be.
The bottom left.
Is north this way?
This would be the corner.
That's southwest, that's north.
No, that's north. North.
That's northwest and southwest.
Northwest. Huh?
So we're not talking about any construction going through here.
That's what I thought Don said.
Okay. Yes. Yes, we are talking about a sidewalk that would have to be constructed there.
Okay.
So we're going to lead from the project at this corner across here. We lead into this.
Well, I think we probably do have to examine that a little bit closer and see, make sure that we're doing the right thing there. I'm also a little bit concerned about the lack of notices that was brought forward by several people tonight. Granted, this project has been in the works for a long time, but if people weren't noticed that we were discussing it tonight, I find that to be a little bit distressing, and I'd want to find out why that happened. In terms of creek access, I'm tempted to think that's probably not a good idea. I can understand the desire to have it as an educational opportunity and an opportunity for people to enjoy the creek there, but I wonder just how much of that we could actually accomplish in that location. And I think perhaps Fish and Game may have some things to say about that. I'm also concerned about the privacy issues for the back of the several houses that go into that area. The pathway that's a public access pathway does cross through the individual property owners. And if they were to try to fence the back of their property off, they would cut off that pathway and it would not be accessible. So I think we do have to maybe... In general, I can support this. I do think that it's a vast improvement over what we first saw, and I think that we've come a great distance in trying to accommodate the needs of the city with the needs of and the desires of the developer here. The massing of the building has been minimized. We saw in that one simulation that part of the structure had been eliminated that tended to down to lessen the effects and impacts of the scale of it. So, absent a couple of the minor issues that I've talked about, perhaps figuring out what we're going to do with the sidewalk here, figuring out the fence access to the back of the properties, I can support this.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to say or remind some folks that need reminding that I've been involved with this project for 7 years, just as the applicants have. And I have a number of comments, and you have to bear with me because I need to take time to sort of put a cap on this. But the first thing I want to say is I like it as it is now, and I am for approving it this evening if we possibly can. I do have two questions in my mind before I make my comments. One is, what about the matter of notification or lack of it? I ran into Mr. Tullis and then Barbara Friel. And then the Murphys all mentioned that they didn't receive any notice tonight. Does that put us in a precarious legal position?
No. If notice was mailed appropriately to property owners pursuant to code, the fact that they didn't get it in and of itself doesn't affect the decision.
Okay. And then, Don, I'm a little confused about still a question of 40-foot curb-to-curb versus the widening. Now, I think I understand that where the sidewalk will go across, I'm sorry, where the crosswalk will go across from south to north, you're going to need, I thought it would just be a little dab of concrete, but you're going to need sidewalk, holy cow, right through the middle of Ms. Fulmer's landscaping and trees and all that. What about the rest? And am I right in assuming that's what you just said? That you need there will be a sidewalk, say, what is it, about 40, 50 feet of sidewalk from the corner down? Okay. And that's not the developer's responsibility, is it?
It can be.
Okay.
This red line, I just want to clarify, this red line it shows the elongation of this curb line, but really there's this room here to construct whatever we need to in the public right-of-way. Swale that leads into an open culvert. And so when we construct the sidewalk over that, we'll need to put a drop inlet to catch water to go in there, and then we'll cover over that open culvert.
All right. What about from that point where the crosswalk is heading west towards the creek? Are you talking about widening 40-foot wide all the way down and curb all the way down and even sidewalk all the way down to the creek?
The applicant is being required to construct a road that's to the 40-foot standard, but he will be constructing the half width or 20 feet on his side of the center line.
Okay, thank you.
And we clarified that in the conditions.
All right, thanks. All right, as I said, this project has been back and forth for seven. Okay. I'm sorry, were you done?
No, we were just talking about maybe recommending that the improvements that we just talked about be included in the conditions of approval this evening.
Okay.
For council consideration.
Thank you. I'll just echo Councilman Guthrie's and Councilman Costello's comments about the fact that an awful lot of the shortcomings of the project have been eliminated due to the applicant's willingness to listen to the neighbors and the staff and the council and the planning commission and everybody else. I really think that with the four-way stop, which will be there, and the lack of three or four driveways that were going to come out onto Crown Terrace, that and the lack of a gate inside, there will be much less traffic on Crown Terrace after the project goes in than there is right now. For a couple of years, our family lived in the house in the upper right with a white roof, and there was a heck of a problem with people speeding around, making that a shortcut in the morning and in the afternoon. I think that's all going to go away. I think the traffic problem that the Murphys perceive down by their property will be a whole lot less. Just to say something also about that gate, a couple of years ago I was all for the internal gate, but after thinking about it, if you have an internal gate, the folks in the residences, if they want to get to the freeway, will have to go north through the project, right on La Pointe, right on Crown Terrace, stop, turn right on Crown Hill Street, then go to the stop sign, wait for the kids to go by, and then wait for traffic to stop and turn right. Without a gate, they'll come out through the access that's been required and acquired onto either the Crown Hill or over on Branch Street and go to the freeway. So I think the traffic problems have really been essentially, the potential traffic problems have really been addressed and solved. Regarding the path to the creek, water, clear water flowing down Arroyo Grande Creek, and we have good access there for kids to go down and get their toes wet or whatever. And also in the creek behind this project, there's a very, very dense brambles and willows and poison oak and all kinds of things. So I think, with all due respect to Chair Ray, that I would say that, and actually Gary Shirkos as well, that I am not for a pathway down to the creek at this spot. It's wet down there, but it's not water. There's not water flowing, so it'd just be a mud hole if we get folks down there. And I think there's enough in the way of brambles and poison oak and so on to keep them out of the creek anyhow. We'll see. I met with Debbie Black, the landscape architect for the project, earlier today, and I'm surprised and pleased to see what she came up with. Long ago, during the EIR process, it was stated in the EIR that not only are these buildings historically significant, but so is the raised railroad bed that's still there from 100 and some years ago. And I looked at what they had proposed as far as a rail here and a rail there, and I talked to Debbie, and then Mr. DeBlau came up, and we talked at length about this sort of getting a better representation of the railroad bed, actually two rails of the right size, the right distance apart with some ties or some simulation of ties, closer to the away from the residential, closer to the commercial, so that the folks that come into town, the railroad aficionados that come into town on buses to actually look at things like this will have something to really visit, and they won't be up in people's front yards. And I'm very pleased with the fact that this somewhat expanded island is, I believe, right on top of the railroad bed, and it's a heck of an improvement to what was a shortcoming, and boy, done in 2 or 3 hours. So that's very much appreciated, and I hope the rest of us can support that. I noticed bioswales are in the project as it's proposed now in the staff report, and I think that's a darn good idea. It was mentioned during the Planning Commission meeting that, well, bioswales will impede the flow of water, or bioswales won't have much effect during a flood. Well, 99% of the time there is no flood, but people are washing their cars, rainfall is landing on the ground, and I think bioswales will handle that very well and filter the water into the aquifer and before it goes into the creek, and so definitely bioswales are a good idea. I just want to remind everyone that we do have a 25-foot creek setback, and there should be no scraping, no filling, no disturbing during the whole construction process. Occasionally that happens by accident, I'm sure, and that's not a good idea. I want to mention a little bit about just the benefits of density, because some of the neighbors have complained that this is too dense. And I really like the density. If I could, I think that I'd have some more housing elements there. There are a number of benefits of having density and infill. Some were mentioned by the architect. First of all, it's zoned for that. So I don't think we could restrict it anymore if we wanted to. Occupants can walk to patronized village merchants, and that's a good thing because everybody wants to protect the character of the village, and you can do that by supporting the mom-and-pop businesses there. So that's a good thing to have more folks there that can walk into the village. Those businesses are almost all family-owned and operated, and that's a very much a rarity these days, as you know from visiting other towns. Walking, not driving, reduces air pollution, as Mr. Peachy mentioned, and traffic congestion is also reduced. And it actually promotes fitness and good health. So walking is a good thing, and having folks live close to the village, I think, is really a good idea. Infill keeps homes off the ag land, reduces sprawl, as Mr. Peachy mentioned. And it actually promotes buying locally to help keep the money in town because you have folks living in town instead of out way out in the country. And it uses existing infrastructure, keeps taxes as low as possible. And there are other benefits, but that's probably enough. And I certainly do think that the city attorney's suggested condition of approval 116 should be in the conditions of approval when we approve this project, if we do that tonight, in order to prevent problems later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to start out by thanking the Blaus. I think they really did take us to heart this last time around. We had some pre-meetings where we actually had a chance to see this, and so I'm very, very happy that I know there was a lot of frustration after we denied the project the last time around that there was, you know, frustration that a lot of work had gone into it, but I don't think anybody's disputing tonight that the project that we see before us is a much better project. So I'll start off with the punchline that I will be approving the project tonight, or I'll be voting to approve the project tonight. But I do want to go over a few of the points that have been brought up tonight. I have to say I'm really glad that Commissioner Ray came and spoke about the footpath to the creek, because I don't think I could have done it near as eloquently as she did it. But I definitely think this is a really critical piece of the project that we have the footpath down there. The speak of the fact that there may be plants down there right now that would make it less desirable to be down there initially may be true, but I think that if all creeks were left to their natural state, we probably wouldn't see any areas that would be very enjoyable, especially with some of the steeper banks here. So I do think this is a very important area where we're going to see public access as far as with the path and the connection. And I'd like us to see us developing some of the areas that do make sense with the creek access. I think they're very enjoyable areas, and I think this could be one as well. The reference to the gate restriction as far as the traffic and stuff, I have a little bit of concern with actually the scenario where council member Fellows suggested that everybody will go out through the development from the residential portion. My feeling is that could be actually bad, and I do think that that's actually going to be what happens. So while I don't want to necessarily impose a gate today, I would like to at least have a look back provision for a year or two later so that if there is a problem with it backing up onto Crown Hill, that we have an ability to fix that. The trees, I'm pretty much happy with whatever works best here. I'm going to leave it up to the developer. At the end of the day, I want to see a lot of trees there, whether it's best to leave the cypress there, thin them, or to remove them. I'm okay with whatever ends up working best there. I agree that the pathway easement needs to be tightened up, so I don't see a downside on adding the stipulation of 116. I understand that we're trying not to open up a can of worms here and have one little issue stop the project. At the same token, I don't want to see one little issue end up causing a real big nightmare down the road. The Green Build booklet, I actually would like to see the applicant use the checklist, but only for informational purposes only. I don't want to see them required to meet a particular point standard. I think they would actually be surprised that they will have no problem meeting the 50 points, but the same token, this is not something that I want to see added at the last minute without them having any chance to review it or whatnot. But at the same token, I think the goal of the city with the checklist is to try to encourage all the builders that come in to fill it out just from an informational standpoint so that they can see that actually there are ways to be green without it actually costing a whole lot. So I think just from an informational standpoint, to have them fill it out and turn it in, they can see where they did on it. I have mixed feelings. I give Councilman Guthrie a hard time for not staking on this one, and I have to agree that I'm a little bit in between as far as the Brown properties, whether they should be on the historical registry. I think the reality is that's where we're going to be looking for them to go. And so the fact that they were sold off prior to this project has been kind of a little bit of a sore spot for me, that we've had some of the access easements as well problems because of the fact that some of these properties were sold prior to this project being finalized. So I'm going to hedge on this one too and say I will go with the will of the council on this one. So with that said, now I do want to cover a couple of the concerns that the adjacent neighbors had. As far as the plaza noise, I think this use of this plaza is being a little overblown. I don't think it's very big. I don't anticipate we having concerts there or anything else. We have those Nelson Green. So I see this as probably being more something where if there ends up being a restaurant there, they have some outdoor tables or something. So I don't think the noise is going to be much of an issue at all. As far as the issues with awareness, I have to also say this is a product that's been in the works for 7+ years, and there's been a lot of discussion here. And so at this point in time, I'm not prepared to look at the commercial component and say go back to the drawing board. I actually am thrilled with what I'm seeing. The earlier versions of the commercial component were much larger, and they would have been much more impacting on your homes than what we're seeing today. The fact that they've moved the third floor internally more, I think, is going to actually end up working out really well. With that said, I think you may have some logic to potentially coming forward with a rezoning of your properties, but I'm not in a position tonight to discuss that to any extent other than to say that there may be logic there. There would have to be, obviously, the concern would be whether or not it would domino down the road, but at least I think that would be something worthwhile to talk to staff with. I must say that for every developer out there looking, I think on any controversial product, this is going to be the way that I'm going to be expecting presentations be made. And so maybe Michael's going to end up with a lot of work out of this, but I think that the 3D, we all have a pretty good idea of what we might actually get here. And I think in the past, that's always been a major concern when we've had the three-dimensional models that were actually built. I know they're very costly, and unfortunately, even with the Blaus recognizing that they did one, and then when they came back in, there were changes made, but not to the model itself. And so everybody had a very difficult time understanding what was changed and what wasn't. So without a doubt, this presentation is so superior to anything we've seen before that I will definitely be looking for this kind of information. So with that, and as far as the street and sidewalk improvements that have been recommended by staff, I do think there is a nexus. We are talking about making an improvement here that is for the traffic to flow. So I don't think it's a very large piece, and so I can support the minor improvement. I wouldn't want to see us impacting the neighbors' landscapes, especially any mature trees, so I'd like us to design it in a way that we didn't impact that. But I think that sidewalk is an important piece of the circulation flow here. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'll start off by commenting, Michael, you on your presentation. I think when we had our first meeting here, when you first came up with the idea and introduced us to the software that you used, I think all of us were pretty impressed with it. And I think in terms of cost effectiveness, this as opposed to a mock-up that you try and build on a tabletop and then change it as comments and observations come in, this is far superior So, yeah, there is a standard set here and expectation. I don't know how successful we're going to be. This isn't copyrighted or patented, I hope. You know, originally, I think all of us here go back with this project since its inception. And I originally did not approve this project because of the building mass and also the driveways on Crown Terrace. My main concern, I think, in that configuration was in fact the garage parking over living space, and that was a pretty big issue with me. But I'm going to go down the list, and I think probably I want to deal first of all with this proposed condition 116. And Tim, I'm thinking maybe we can help this process a little bit simply by maybe coming up with a template. You know, you put in here to the satisfaction of the city attorney. So maybe we can just describe what you need, and in terms of wording, and pass that on, and hopefully we can shortcut this process and maybe assist the DeBlaus.
I have talked to their attorney about that, so I don't think this should be much of a problem.
Okay, good. Let me talk a little bit about I want to mention first and foremost about since we were talking about the building mass and the changes along. Can we put up the other slide? The one of the model itself. I didn't know you had to unplug wires there. Okay, I'm thinking that we can work with the what's in our code on this building height here. And particularly the roof over the parking structure, and make sure that you know, if we're just a small amount of distance off, that we can get that reconciled. So, but we are going to need to address the height of that parking. But I think we can work it out. On the green building standards, Mike, you had mentioned the fact that you weren't aware of the fact that the city of Arroyo Grande had signed agreements, and I think we need to go back and explore what that is. You know, we were the first city in the county to sign the Green Build MOU, but the MOU simply stated that, number one, we were going to establish goals to move towards. To my knowledge, we don't have any fixed policy yet on green building standards. So it's a process that's in motion right now. We know where we want to go. We're just not there yet. So we don't have standards in place, nor are we ready to make requirements of anyone. Now, that said, what we have been talking about doing is, in fact, taking a menu approach, which I believe to some extent this book does that. But if we're talking about, and we certainly are, we're talking about ways in which we can promote energy efficiency, more efficient lighting systems, some of the energy saver appliances and those kinds of things that I think you already use and already put in, and then the use of renewables. And you had mentioned some of the recycled building material that you used. And I would have to echo some of the comments that were made that I think if you work your way through this checklist just based on your practice that's in place now, you might find yourself at a higher point level than you thought you were. I think it's the... if I'm reading the council right, I think it's our desire to be able to look at this project, and we certainly can't compel you to do anything at a certain designated point level. But it would be nice if during the construction process you could look at the checklist, look at what you're already doing, look at some small modifications that you might make along the way to achieve perhaps a higher level than you thought you could. And then at that point, we might be able to look back at this project and say, wow, here's a good example. Are we in a position to compel you to do that? No, we're not. But I know that, once again, that based on practices that you already have in place, you might be farther along than you think you are. So just an awareness, I think, is all I would be looking for at this point. I like the open traffic circulation. And for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think with a complex such as this, where we have a mixed-use interaction and we have essentially three ingress-egress points, I believe that the only way we can tell whether or not this circulation is going to work itself through is by observing. And we've always taken the progressive approach. I tend to think that the open approach is best because people are, in fact, going to find their own way through this and a path of least resistance. I think they'll figure out a way to navigate it that suits their driving habits the best. If we find out that we have to help that process at some point in the future through observation, then of course we can take that progressive next step, but we won't know unless we see it work. The cypress trees, I'm a big tree guy, but unless we can make those cypress trees up there look a heck of a lot better than they do now, I would just assume we yank them out and start over again. Put in a nice coordinated landscape plan that really makes that corner look superb. And what I see up there now is a far cry from that. And I understand we can do some pruning, but I have no problem at all with taking another look at that whole area up there and redoing it, particularly if we have to make room for sidewalks and so forth. I have mixed emotions about the ADA requirements and the intersection improvements for all four corners of LaPointe and Crown Terrace. I think if we're going to put that requirement in there, we ought to also look, Don, at perhaps seeing how we can assist in that process, either through, you know, if we've got some funding in that will allow us to do or help with the ADA process and some of those improvements. I see that much more of a team effort than laying it on one side or the other. You know, if we want to put that in there as a condition, I'm hoping that the council would say, let's work together on it. On the historic reference to the two houses on the Browns property, I think I do not believe that it is appropriate to put that condition on this particular project because the de Blaus don't own that property. I believe it was Ms. Flores that made the recommendation, which I think is a good one, that I would much rather have our Historic Resources Committee, since they're doing the survey anyway, I would much rather have them interact with the Browns, and I would much rather have us help them through the registry process than to lay it on this project. I think it's much more appropriate that we do it that way. I would concur with the Mayor Pro Tem's observations on that. The plaza for the benefit of the Murphys who are here tonight. I don't see that as a big event venue. I'll tell you what I do see happening out there is maybe an employee meeting. If people want to get outside, if the weather's nice and they're tired of being indoors, I see some lunch benches out there for people to have lunch outside. If people are walking along and they happen to come from one of the delis in town and they want to sit down and have lunch in a nice setting, that's the kind of activity that I foresee in that that little plaza area. Certainly not a concert. I'm sure at this point we need to be ultra sensitive to concerts in the city. The issue of creek access. I think we need to pay attention to this, and not from the standpoint of either tying it to this project or not tying it to this project, but of studying it. This is not an easy issue. This is a very complex issue. And I think first and foremost what we need to do is have our Creek Subcommittee that Teresa's a member of and some of the other people who are in the RCD get our watershed study, our creek study out, which includes Tally Ho. I mean, there are a number of issues here. We have to look at stability. We have to look at bank stability. We have to look at species. We have to look at some of the observations that I'm sure Commissioner Tate had about permitting. It's not just a footpath. It's much more complex than that. So I'm not opposed to having that in there, and I wouldn't mind having us as a city study it. But to construct some form of access is a very expensive ordeal, particularly if we have to interact with some of the permitting agencies. So what I would like to do is use this project as a catalyst to initiate those kinds of studies. And but along with that, might well come some additional money to enhance some form of a creekside pathway, similar to what we've done on Arroyo Grande Creek. That money is available through SLOCOG and other funding mechanisms. If we're going to do it, let's do it right, and let's put something there that accommodates everybody, and it might well entail vegetation removal, which is in some parts of the creek okay to do, but you have to get a permit to do it. So once again, it's not an easy task, but I'm certainly willing to have the city undertake this. I think probably the walking paths that are adjacent to the creek could in fact set something like that up. We could very easily tie in some kind of a creek network, path network to this project as well as the project across the street. But we can't do it unless we study it, and experience has taught us that. I like the extra effort that Councilmember Fellows put in to on the landscape detail. I really like the little monument or interpretive sign that designates the historic significance of the railway. Once again, this is not a new issue. This is actually, I think, when the project first came to us and we were doing some preliminary observations, it was former Councilmember Dickens that raised this issue and wanted something there in the form of a sign or some sort of a landmark that would designate that spot. I like this approach a lot better. So I can certainly support that. And the last thing that I want to say is thank you to Dwayne and Richard and everyone involved in this project for sticking with us. And I know that it's been a tough road, but what we have in front of us is just tremendously better than where we were. So my hat's off to you for hanging in there. And I can certainly support this project with the comments that have been made this evening. Okay, anything else? All right, if not, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande to consider an addendum to the previously certified final environmental impact report for the project, adopt a mitigation monitoring program, instruct the Director of Administrative Services to file a notice of determination and approve vesting tentative tract map case number 04-004 and plan unit development case number 04-001 located at 415 East Branch Street, applied for by DBNM Properties LLC, with the additional changes that the railroad landscape detail as presented tonight be included, that the footpath to the creek be installed if feasible after study by the city, that a look back provision for a gate after 2 years be available, that the trees in the northeast corner, the cypress trees, be removed and replaced with a new landscape plan, that the pathway easement be tightened using, item 116 that has been proposed tonight, that the applicant use the city's green build checklist only for guidelines and for informational purposes and not to meet any particular point standard, and to remove the requirement that the two Brown properties be listed on the historical registry until at a later date when they may come forward with their own project or the HRC determines with the Browns. Did I forget anything?
That sounds okay to me.
Second, and we'll go on to discussion.
Okay, yeah, why don't we second, and then we'll go to discussion. Do we have a second? Okay. Now, is there discussion?
It looks like Steve has a comment. I have a question regarding the 116, the way the motion maker described it.
It wasn't pathway. It was driveway access.
Okay, yes.
I think that's what he meant.
No. The pathway is the problem that we have with the easement access between the driveway and the...
116 is the public access to the... It's the driveway.
Okay.
It's the driveway.
Oh, okay. Then it's that's the one, yes.
It was that you... Yeah, that was my. I had two questions. It was one, the condition referencing the access agreement. So you're saying that was referenced?
Is reference is included? Yes. Okay.
And then we had also suggested a condition specifying the sidewalk improvements.
Okay. I will include those, but I would like us to work with under the mayor's concept of some kind of fairness. I do believe that the majority of this should be put on this project, but if there is something that is excessive, and I don't know how we're going to define that tonight. I'm trying to honor the mayor's request here.
Well, I'm just saying let's do the best we can in that area.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's probably some financial assistance we could provide with regard to the handicap ramps, but if you could keep it kind of vague, we will work with them and come up with something, some okay. participation.
As determined by the city staff.
Well, we'll need some language in the condition. You can interpret it as you want, but we could add to condition 58. Right now it says, analyze the intersection of Crown Terrace and LaPointe Street for traffic control improvements and install an always stop and any other improvements as are deemed necessary by the Director of Public Works. We can then include specifically, including drainage and sidewalk improvements on the northwest corner, an indeterminate amount. And that can be the negotiating point. But I think you're going to need to include some language in the condition itself.
As you just said, that sounds great.
Okay. Including drainage and sidewalk improvements on the northwest corner.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a second still. All right. Now, we're still in the discussion phase here. Just want to make sure that if we're talking about ADA improvements, if we're talking about drainage, Don, if we have any means of stepping in and assisting with that process through some other grant funding source or whatever we have available, that we look into assisting where possible. Okay. Is that acceptable?
Yeah, if you wanted to add some wording, you could say with some level of city financial assistance as feasible or something like that.
I think the as feasible part, yeah.
Is that acceptable?
To me? Sure.
Okay. Still acceptable here? All right. Any other discussion?
Ed, some of the neighbors that live on LaPointe Street on the north side, and I guess some others, were very desirous of having the cypresses stay there. It's been written into the staff report that they would be there would be some latitude there, maybe taking out every other one just by cutting it off at the base and so on. But I know that they're not here tonight, but that was their desire. I'm going to vote yes on this because of all the other improvements that have been made to the project, but I would love to see that there's some option left in there.
Well, I'll leave it up to the developer. What I guess I'm almost not wanting to do, I don't think they will, because they want a quality project, is I don't want the cheapest solution, which is just to leave the trees potentially as well. And I think we all agree that the trees are definitely a little rough. I think part of the problem has been in the past of what are you getting, and so therefore the trees have been great to screen. But realistically, new trees that, and as you know, I've been a very strong supporter of the trees as well. So I'll leave flexibility to the applicant if we don't want to require them to remove them 100%. But
can we leave flexibility to the applicant in discussion with the Public Works Director?
Well, and parks
and parks, I think, yeah.
Let's have it as a discussion process.
There we go.
One more comment
either,
on that.
Either that or have it come back to the ARC for the final landscaping plan.
Yeah, that would be fine, too. Why don't we
yeah, and I think the reason why Public Works is a part of this as well is because I see the whole tree issue being attended and related to sidewalk improvements and everything else, and the degree to which we can orchestrate those things together may, you know, it may mean that we can't keep them, but it may mean that we can keep some. So we can structure in that kind of flexibility.
One more comment. It's been mentioned that those are short-lived trees. If the landscape architect, Ms. Black, says those are Leylandii cypress, they do have a short lifespan, and they should go. If they're Monterey cypress, they could live another 80 years, 100 years. So, again, that's up to the
– I think let it go back to the ARC for the final, and then that way there is the potential, if we want to bring it all the way back here at that point, we could.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on this?
To the ARC, recommending to the Parks Recreation Facilities Director, or just for final approval by the ARC?
I think final approval
for the landscaping
okay,
plan.
You.
I think the Parks and Recreation Director will.
I think so.
All right. Any other questions of the motion from staff?
Just to clarify, I believe is it of just the landscaping, or are we also going to send to ARC for the final approval on the building? Are we approving the building we're seeing? You know, when they actually do the lines drawing for the building and
by the building?
Yeah, there's a special condition here for it to go back to the ARC.
Yeah. So we're just adding it to that.
Okay. Anything else? Make sure we got it all. All right, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, council is going to take a short recess. Okay, council is back in session, and we are at item number 10, continued business. We have none this evening. 11 is new business. We have none. We'll move to item 12, city council reports. I will go first. SLOCOG has not met since I gave my last report. However, we are in the process of looking at our arena numbers, and SLOCOG has, in fact, formed the committee to which will involve our community development and I'm not sure who else from the city, but I know you're part of that. Are you not, Rob? Okay. And I know that we're going to remain vigilant and throughout the process of formulating the criteria that will be used for the distribution of the arena figures. South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. I have been attending those meetings, and we're looking at a couple of issues right now. First is the Bakeman Lane trunk line, and there's been some discussion between the Sanitation District and Don Spagnola, particularly about a stretch along the Bakeman line that I think you're aware of, Steve. And I understand we have put in some locking manhole covers around areas. We had a consultant that actually came through and looked at some of the debris that was pulled out of that line, and it's substantial, and it was impeding the flow. So I think there are a total of, I think, six manholes that now have locks on them, which is appropriate. And that's essentially what we were trying to do from the outset. And that concludes my report, and we'll move to Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The IWMA did meet. I was unable to attend, and I have not received the minutes from that, so I will report on that meeting at the next opportunity. And the EBC meets Wednesday, so I'll have a report at the next opportunity as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Zone 3 met last week, a regular bi-monthly meeting. The lightning storm we had a couple weeks back actually blew out some of the pumps we had in the new facility, and they couldn't explain why. Fortunately, they're on warranty and have been replaced, but a little concerning. And we're still progressing towards the habitat conservation plan, but meetings with the people that need to deal with it at the state and federal level keep getting put off, so we're no closer than we were. APCD has not met for 2 months. We meet tomorrow. I have nothing to report except one of a couple of things. Tomorrow we give out the environmental awards in the morning. And there's some additional grant funding that's have been made available, and that had been promised to the CMR Unified School District if it became available to assist in replacing an older diesel bus. So it looks like that will probably be going through tomorrow. That will help clear the air down here. Fire Oversight Committee has met fairly recently. We have hired or in the process of hiring the battalion chief that will also be the training officer, so that's good to see. Fire consolidation hasn't met several months, so there's nothing to report on that. That's my report.
Thank you. Joe, I have a question on, do you have your APCD agenda with you by chance?
Not with me, no.
Okay. I just want to flag something. There's apparently a joint effort, and I'm not sure what the relationship is. APCD may be funding a community-based questionnaire, and it's something that we're supposed to use for 2050. And what I'm seeing coming out of APCD, they've taken the liberty to insert questions on this questionnaire. And at least in my view, and I don't think I'm alone on the SLOCOG board, they deal, I think, unnecessarily with the whole issue of global warming. And I sit back and I look at those questions, not from the standpoint of how I personally feel about it, but I look at the design of those questions in terms of what kind of usable information would be derived from it, and I can't find any. And I think I know where the questions are coming from, but I can tell you right now their support on the board not to approve those questions, simply because they're not producing the kind of information that we feel that we can actually use. It may be feel good stuff, but it's not stuff we can use. So if you get any blowback from some of the comments coming from the SLOCOG board on that questionnaire, that's the rest of the story.
Okay.
And what I'd like the APCD board to do is take another look and get off of the agendas and start dealing with useful information that can be derived from a survey instrument. And what we have coming from APCD is not it. Okay. Councilmember Guthrie.
The SCAP board did meet. I think I discussed with you guys last time that there was going to be some significant route changes with the SCAT and RTA, and RTA did, in fact, put in those changes. It's my understanding that that side of it's going pretty well. We are having some connection issues. I think maybe we've made the routes maybe a little bit too long, but at any rate, some connections issues with that, but we are working through those. I guess for the public, if you are bus riders and have some issues, I do need to hear from you so that I can relate those to the SCAT staff that, you know, the kinds of problems we're having. Most of the issues we're hearing are actually coming from Grover Beach and a few from Pismo. As I told you last time as well, we have some funding available that we talked about doing a deal with the school. Apparently the school's going to meet us a little more than halfway, and so a little more of that money will be available, as well as some other capital fundings for more bus stop improvements. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of a physical presence from SCAT in the area, including in the village. That's it.
Okay. I asked the same question across the street was it Kamala at the front desk? She takes kind of the brunt of things now that she's out there, and the bus stop's right across the street, and she said there were some initial issues with people now having to, you know, take the bus here to the park and ride lot to catch the bus into San Luis.
There were two problems. One was that some people really were able to get directly on the RTA, which was a pretty sweet deal, and that's not quite such a sweet deal anymore. But there were also issues with, you know, they're doing 1 hour turnarounds, and you know it's like a 55-minute schedule, and all they need is you know the high school students to put them behind or something like that.
Right.
And that was the kind of issues that I think they're now working through by shortening the routes a little bit.
Right. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem. Oh, I'm sorry, we got to you. Councilmember Fellows.
Thank you. To my knowledge, the South County Youth Coalition did not meet this summer. It does meet 2 days from now, and I'll be there. As far as the Water Resources Advisory Committee, it met while we were all in Sacramento at the League of California Cities meeting. So was Councilman Guthrie, who's my alternate. And I do not have the agenda from that meeting. But if I get it, when I get it, I'll look for what's pertinent and bring it up. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. That takes us to item 13, City Council Member Items. Council Member Costello, you have one this evening?
Yes, I do. I had occasion about a week ago to need to drop by the charter office with an equipment problem on a Friday and found it closed, which when I asked City Manager, if he could find out what was going on, and it turns out that it's closed Fridays now, and they're in the process of shutting it down completely and eliminating local office, which led me to ask the City Manager, well, what kind of agreement do we have? What services are they supposed to be providing? And it all seems rather nebulous. So I was wondering if members of the community, because I've had occasion in the past year to need to go to that office on three different occasions, and each time I had to wait half an hour to 45 minutes to be waited on, and now that's not even going to be an option. If I need service, I'm going to have to go up to San Luis Obispo. And I'm just wondering, what kind of services is Charter supposed to be providing to our citizens, and what are the options we have? Just wondering if this is an issue that affects anyone besides me. If there are members out there in the community that are affected, we'd like to hear about it.
Okay. So the request is to have this come back as a future agenda item.
Perhaps investigate exactly.
Right, with some staff work behind it. Okay.
Can I ask if there's any chance that it could be covered in a memo? I mean, I have a feeling the answer is pretty straightforward, so I was going to suggest we might save some time.
I would suggest, as far as our research, it'd probably be easier to cover in a memo. Where it's actually pretty limited within our franchise agreement what role we have to play. Although I think some of the intent of Councilmember Costello was to, kind of publicize this to see if there are customers out there that may have concerns. If it were agendized, what I would suggest is to invite the representative from Charter to come and explain exactly what their proposal is and how they're proposing to handle it, and that might be something that would be beneficial, but staff would be fine dealing with it either way, however you'd like to direct us to do it.
Okay. I have a request. It's not a agenda item per se, but it's just a request. And I find myself in the same dilemma that Councilmember Fellows finds himself in from time to time, torn between council member items and council communication. But Steve, they're just, you know, at the dedication the other day for the park pavilion, the new construction out at Soto Sports Complex. For those of you who haven't seen that area, that picnic area, it's very nice. But one thing that's missing from it, and I mentioned it to Doug Parent, is we don't have recycle bins out there. And in fact, if you look at all of our parks facilities, we don't have good recycle delineation for clean paper, bottles, cans, so on and so forth. I think we're getting a little bit complacent here, and I would like to see us come up with a recycle plan for our facilities in particular. So that's just sort of a put it on the wish list, if you will. It doesn't have to come back to us, but it was obvious that that was not included in the new design and construction and needs to be. Okay. We need to look at all of our facilities to include our office facilities.
Absolutely. I know that's been a concern in the past.
Okay. 14 is city manager items.
I have no items. Did we resolve Councilmember Costello's request, whether you wanted it as an agenda item or just a staff?
Oh, I think we were talking about a memo.
Memo's fine, and Let's see if we get a lot of people that let us know they're having problems. Maybe we'll talk about bringing it back and making it an agenda.
Maybe we stiff a call into Charter Communications and find out what their plan is. And
yeah, we've done that, so I can get the information from them and pass that on to you.
Okay.
The manager also wanted to tell you that you all, those that went to the league conference, owe a AB1234 report.
Perhaps staff communications.
Was that staff communications?
You're jumping ahead.
Oh, well, the manager was supposed to report that during manager item.
An AB1234?
He's sorry.
Okay. Was that an attempt at humor? Oh, okay.
Very poor attempt.
Your mandatory report after your conferences.
All right. We'll get right on that.
Not tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Item 15 is council communication. Anything?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I have something. It's a little bit of a report from the meetings we went to. We saw how many hundreds of different displays and so on. But one really impressed me as something we could do right away, and this is a waste management question, Ed, or a comment. I don't know if you went to the booth where the folks, young folks, everybody's young to me, three of them in the booth said that they would come to town, they would set up an event ahead of time, come to town, pick up old electronic equipment and fluorescent bulbs that have mercury inside, and recycle those, and actually profit share with the money they get from the recycling. And he's been emailing me, and I think he's been emailing you because I told him to, Steve. Have you gotten emails from somebody regarding that? I'd like to see us go ahead and explore that. It seems like a win-win. We get rid of it. I got a computer tower sitting in my yard. I don't know how to get rid of it or where to go with it.
Take it over to Cold Canyon. We're set up there to do computers and TVs.
Yeah, or send me the information and I'll have them get a hold of them, because right now that's costing us money, especially with the fluorescent tubes, to recycle those. So there may be an opportunity if someone wants to pay us. This might be because we don't need actually someone to come and collect them, because right now, as the mayor pointed out, we do have the recycling facility at Cold Canyon for the electronics. And
my understanding was, sure, that's Cold Canyon, and there's a lot of places to dump your stuff on the way out there, but they would come to, say, a parking lot in town here and set up the whole thing. People might be more inclined to go there. So, but I will give you the information. I've got two bags of that stuff that we picked up, and soon, I'm going to go through that soon, and I'll get you the information. Thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Actually, we did meet with him the other day and got information on the program, so we'd be glad to pass that on to the council, see if you're interested. It to some extent, it duplicates what they do at Cold Canyon, but it provides a one-day opportunity to make it more convenient for local folks, and actually the city gets a little bit of the reimbursement from the money that they generate. So,
and it's a public thing where it maybe increases awareness that sort of thing, that fluorescent tubes, I used to just bust them up when I was a kid and put them in the trash. I should probably breathe the mercury and I'll probably die next year. But, you know, it's public. Rather than just them, you know, the public supposed to know that you can take it to Cold Canyon, but maybe they don't. So
probably the easiest thing to do, I could do a brief report on it and put it on consent and see if there's interest on the council.
Well, I would be more interested in having, is that yours, Ed?
Yes.
IWME.
Yep.
I'd be more interested in getting the information and having Ed run it by Bill Worrell and seeing if we can't, you know, not just sponsor something here in the city, but do it, you know, look at it in adjacent communities as well. And it seems like IWMA is the ideal umbrella to maybe get that done.
I did mention it to Bill, so he's aware of it.
Okay, great. I just want to also remind everybody that the Harvest Festival is this weekend.
And if you, did I take your thunder again?
Yeah.
And the mayor's been kind enough to defer the cow or goat milking to myself. So
that's right.
I'm so excited about that. And I believe Councilman Guthrie and I always have our competitive pie eating contest.
There we go. That's what we, well, now at least we can compete.
I'm not sure if we can.
I think the mayor's.
Well, since I'm not here, maybe one of you will win. But you're going to have some explaining to do if you let Supervisor Shajan beat you, either of you or anyone, in the goat milking contest.
I saw how well he did it the last time.
That's right. And of course, we were betrayed in that entire situation by our own city attorney. And at any rate, there's a reason why we're still on council communication, by the way. There's a reason why I'm going to have to defer from the goat milking experience, and that is because myself and a few others from the city, as well as Bob Lund, will be back in Rockford, Illinois. And hopefully the city of Arroyo Grande will fare well in its America in Bloom contest. And the national awards will be given out the same day as the Harvest Festival, by the way. So we will be back there keeping our fingers crossed that we've fared well in that national competition. And the other thing, the last thing I want to say under council communication is that I've been threatened. I've been, how shall I say? And so that includes staff as well. And so we're gonna have Aloha shirts on, and that does not mean, that does not include Levi's and shorts or cargo pants. So keep
what,
it.
What kind of tie goes with that?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I'll leave that to your judgment. So, for the benefit of the public, when we show up that day, it will be colorful. So,
and as Councilman Guthrie said, that means we're going to have two in a row then.
I won't be here. Whatever you choose to do. Okay. Item 16 is staff communication.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, let me see. You took away all the fun things. I just wanted to add, well, one, I wanted to add on to your earlier comments, and I appreciate you bringing it up regarding the concert this evening. And on behalf of staff, we want to formally apologize for some errors that were made in the process. You know, I can't say one way or another if it would have ultimately been approved, likely not under our normal process. But certainly we would have had a more detailed process, more police review, and more public input and notification. And so we will be following up with some autopsy of the process and where we broke down, and provide a report to council on how we can prevent that occurring again. We did scramble at the end, and the police department and fire department did do a nice job of putting a plan together at the end. And from what I understand, I checked midway through the meeting just to see how it was going. They had a lower turnout than expected. The band and the organizers seem pretty cooperative, have received some complaints from people in the area just in terms of volume. But other than that, just a few minor problems. So I think it'll work out. But we'll definitely make sure our process functions better in the future.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. And if you would, please, I think all of us agree it was short notice, and our police chief and fire chief, it's the kind of cooperation we like to see, and they put their heads together and made the best of a, you know, what could have been a bad situation, and we appreciate them teaming on this and keeping things under control. So pass on our regards and thanks to them for picking up the ball. Read verbatim if we could maybe get that up front under staff recommendations, that if you approve this, it will require two motions, see page so-and-so, see page so-and-so. That'll keep us from trying to go through a lengthy report and dig those things out. That would be helpful. Aside from that, it's an improvement. Okay, that takes us to 17, community comments and suggestions. We have no one left in the audience, so we will go to 18, which is adjournment.
So moved.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Kelly.